Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. We appreciate having you join our discussion each day, and we'd also like to get your thoughts on the show, so please go to WVXU.org and take part in our listener survey today. If you've been watching the Olympics, no doubt you've come across the game of curling and its interesting terminology like sweeping, hammers, and stones, just to mention a few. Cincinnati Curling Club members Jonathan Penny and Stephanie Simpson join us to explain curling and why its popularity is growing in the U.S., and you can join the discussion at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter, and good afternoon to both of you. Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
And Jonathan, give me a little background on the Cincinnati Curling Club.
We started, it was a bit of a dream by a gentleman named Greg Banks back in 2010, about 2 weeks before the Olympics were on. He got a couple of sets of stones over to the Indian Hill Winter Club, and they started doing Learn to Curl sessions then.
Okay. And how big is it? How many members do you have?
I think last count, we're at 25.
Okay.
Which is a bit of a misleading number because we haven't really forced membership on people at this point. We've just been teaching lots of people how to play and trying to get them hooked and coming back for more.
So 25, though, that's enough to make, what, about six teams?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. We've hosted a league with actually 10 teams in it. So we've had as many as 40 people come through and play regularly.
Stephanie, I'm curious, how did you become hooked on curling?
I became hooked on curling, actually, when I watched it in college in the 2002 Olympics.
Okay.
And I saw it on TV, and my friends and I thought it would be great to try. And so we were up in Michigan, and we went and tried it at Detroit Curling Club in Ferndale, and I've been curling ever since.
What about you, Jonathan? How did you become hooked on the game?
Well, the accent sometimes gives me away, but I grew up in Canada, on the east coast of,
okay.
of Canada, so it's in my blood, so to speak. I started playing when I was 15, and after hockey, it seemed like a better sport on the knees and the back and everything else.
Maybe a little easier than hockey, not quite as rough, yeah.
Not quite as rough, yeah.
What is the history of curling? Where did it come from? When did it start?
It grew up in Scotland. Or born in Scotland, grew up in Canada, I guess is the way we kind of said it. Late 1800s. It's a very, very old sport where they used to play on the canals, frozen canals, and just chucking stones up and down a frozen canal.
Now, it's called the Roaring Game, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Where'd that term come from?
I believe it comes from the sound that the rocks make as they travel down the ice. So they're traveling on what we call a pebbled surface. They're flat ice, kind of like hockey ice, is sprinkled with droplets of water. And when the stone travels across it, that's the noise it makes.
Okay. Now, when you're watching on TV, you hear a little bit of that, but imagine it's louder when you're actually playing the game.
Yeah, it sure is. I mean, when my kids were young, we used to bring my daughter to the curling club, and we'd set her down on the sideboards, and she'd fall right asleep right away. You know, it's 40 Fahrenheit in the curling rink, so we had her all bundled up in snow attire, but that dull roar would just put her right to sleep.
And maybe that explains why it's such a mesmerizing sport to watch.
When
did it become an Olympic sport?
1998.
Okay.
There was a demonstration, I think, as a demo sport in 88 in Calgary and I think 1924 in France. But 98, it got full medal status back again.
So there are four people on a curling team, Stephanie, and what do each of those people do? What roles do they play? What are they called?
Sure. So there's four players, a lead, a second, a vice, and a skip. If you've seen it on TV, the skip is the person who's standing at the far end of the sheet of ice, kind of directing the shots that everyone is making. Every member of the team throws two rocks, so each team will throw eight, and the first three members that I mentioned are the ones that do the sweeping that you see.
I always enjoy, there's a sweeper who's actually behind the rings. I think that's called the house. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
And it's kind of fun to watch this person because it seems like their only job is if the other side is throwing its stones, their job is to make sure if the stone's going out, they help it make its way out of the ring. Am I perceiving that correctly?
No, you're absolutely right.
That's part of the strategy,
yeah,
eh?
That's after the rock passes that tee line halfway through the house. The opposition skip can step in and sweep that rock through.
Oh, so talk a little bit more. What is the object of the game? How are the points scored in the game?
So the object of the game is to get your team's stones closest to the center of the house, those rings that you see. And only one team can score in each end. And so the team with the rocks closest gets those points, for 1 point for each rock that's closest to the center.
Is it comparable to shuffleboard? Is that kind of is that a good analogy?
I'm not sure about shuffleboard, but it's similar to bocce, if you've ever played bocce ball.
Oh, yeah, that is a good comparison. Mm-hmm. Many a time. Mm-hmm. Many a time. And so when you talk about throwing the rock, they're not literally throwing the rock. For somebody who's not seen it, what are they actually doing?
Correct. You're basically sliding that 40-pound piece of granite down the ice, basically keeping the rock on the ice and sliding it down there rather than lifting it and throwing it, like you said.
So these are 40-pound rocks, or they're made of what?
Granite? Yep.
Okay, is it difficult to maneuver something like that? I mean, this isn't a bowling ball we're talking about.
No, it's surprisingly easy. Similar to what Stephanie was saying with the pebbling on the ice, that helps reduce the friction on the ice. So it's surprisingly easy to glide these stones down the ice.
And when the one thing I've always noticed, that you always hear, I think, is it the skip who's yelling the commands?
Most of the time, yeah.
Most of the time. You hear them yelling something. It's hard to make out on TV. What are they yelling? What are they talking about? And you hear all this.
Sure, yeah. So they're giving directions for a couple of things, mostly for the path the rock is taking, but sometimes also for the speed of the rock. And they're directing those sweepers, the two people with the brooms in front of the rock, they're directing them about whether or not they should be sweeping, depending on whether or not they think the rock is going to arrive at the place that they'd like it to in the house.
So the sweeping is actually controlling the path of the stone. They're actually making a pathway for it.
Yeah. So when you sweep the ice, it creates a little bit of heat. It warms the ice just a little bit. That reduces the friction a little bit from the pebbling and will make the rock travel farther and straighter.
I'm curious about the equipment. Is the equipment expensive, or the stones inexpensive?
No, the equipment that people would need to bring to a curling club is very, very minimal. The stones are probably the most expensive part of the sport, and every club in the country would have their own set of stones. You don't necessarily bring your own stones to the curling rink, but certainly a pair of athletic pants, sweatpants, yoga pants, a clean pair of athletic shoes, and then just whatever you'd wear on a spring day.
I'm curious, so when you see some of the old pictures of the game, mm-hmm. are they actually, it looks more like an actual broom.
Yes.
That they're using. Was that what they were
using?
Nowadays, it looks like some kind of a higher tech device.
Correct. Yeah. They moved away from the corn brooms, I don't know, maybe mid-80s, late-80s, and got into more synthetic fibers, and the push-style broom, for sure, was born then as well.
Is this a game that has a lot of strategy in it?
Yes.
Definitely.
What are some of the strategies of the game? I noticed one the other day that was interesting. The American team, he actually had a stone on each side of the ring. And they were talking about how that was a strategy, that particular one made it harder to, you had to pick one stone to eliminate, but you couldn't get to the other one.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So that's splitting the house, I would say.
That's one strategy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the idea, the basic strategy, I guess, I would say is when you have last rock, you want to get 2 points. If you don't have last rock, stealing a point is definitely preferable, but you could also hold your opponent to 1 point. So in a run of a 10-end game, if you take two, give away one, take two, give away one, it doesn't take long for that pattern to be in your favor over the long haul of the match. So certainly splitting the house, like you said, getting two rocks far away from each other to make that double takeout harder. Is a preferable strategy. Hiding behind the guards that are short of the rings, they're still in play. They're not scoring points, but you can curl in behind those rocks and make it harder to get at for your opponent to get at to remove them from play.
Okay, so that's something I've always wondered. Sometimes they come up short and I say, that was a terrible, terrible throw.
Right.
It came up short, but that's not really the case. They're doing something on purpose with that, aren't they?
Definitely, yeah. You know, you can, if you wanted to, you could almost set up a fortress of your rocks in front of the house and make it, with each rock that piles up in front, make it that much more difficult for your opponent to get around. If your rock isn't in the house, it's not scoring any points. And so whether you're spreading out your rocks to make it harder to hit them out, or whether you're blocking your opponent from getting in, those are both ways to ensure that you score and your opponent doesn't.
So there really are a lot of strategies to this game, then. It's not just slide the stone down the ice and hope for the best.
Definitely. No. I've heard it called chess on ice before.
Interesting. Is this a sport that I guess it, the way it looks, it's not something that if you're not in shape, I'd say it wouldn't be a good idea to attempt to play this. I'd have to think you have to be in fairly good shape, because when you're sliding that stone, you're getting way down and you have to balance yourself on the ice. And I imagine there's some fitness level involved in it.
Surprisingly not. The Olympics, we've talked about this a bit at higher levels, but at the recreation level, we can accommodate all shapes and body types for sure. I've seen wheelchair athletes on the ice. I've seen 90-year-old people with replacement hips and replacement knees use a stick type mechanism similar to shuffleboard, so that they don't have to bend over and get into those forward lunge positions. The guys on TV have ruined it for us recreational players in a way, because they do make it look so easy, and they're in such good shape nowadays. It wasn't that long ago that a Canadian skip was asked to was potentially not going to go to the Olympics because he didn't look like an athlete. In fact, he looked a lot like you.
Heavier guy. Okay.
Absolutely. A heavier guy. And they were worried that, you know, this didn't suit the ideals of the Olympics. And I mean, that was kind of farther from the truth, because he was an absolute brilliant strategy player and a touch player as well. So,
right. You can't judge a book by its cover.
Absolutely.
And
yes.
Certainly, just to add on what Jonathan said, you know, although you don't necessarily have to be a extremely fit athlete to play the game will get you fit. There's a lot of sweeping, burns a ton of calories, and it's really a great cardio workout. It gets
your
heart pumping.
Your arms going back and forth that fast, and that many times.
Definitely.
And I take it you don't need to know how to skate to do this?
No, you'll be standing on the ice on shoes.
Okay. Special shoes?
Just a good quality rubber sole. It will get stickier as it gets colder.
Yep.
And of course, there's no drinking of adult beverages at these things, right?
Is that legal in this county? Are you allowed to stand on ice and drink at the same time? The social side of curling is something that we've talked to a lot of players. We're not only teaching players about the game and the skills and the strategy, but the culture of the game certainly is very set in socializing after the game. And it's a tradition in the sport for all eight players, four from each side, to sit down at the same table after the game. And the winners typically will buy the losers the first round. It doesn't have to be alcohol, but the idea is to sit around at the table and be social.
Good social game. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I started watching curling during the last Winter Olympics, and it was addicting. It really was addicting. I'd be interested in what both of you think. What is it that makes this sport so mesmerizing to watch and even to play?
For me, I like the strategy part of it. I grew up playing more of the front end positions, like lead and second. I do like the physicality of the sweeping, but I do get there's an armchair quarterback feel to the games that we watch on TV. My wife and I will be yelling at the TV constantly about the strategy involved. And I'm sure there's lots of football players in this neck of the woods that would be yelling at the TV during a football game. Like, why are you playing a run play here? It's clearly a pass play. But that being said, for me, I between the social side of the game and all the friendships I've made over the years, definitely having that strategy is a big draw for me.
Yeah, and I really enjoy, you know, that it's both an individual and a team sport. So even though you're on a team of four people, you're all working together to score points and win the game for your team, you still work individually on making a good shot or becoming a better sweeper. And so really adding those things along with the social aspect are what got me hooked.
Your thoughts, the Olympic U.S. teams, they're struggling a bit this year. And is the U.S. new enough at this sport that even when they're losing, they're still making a pretty good showing? What are your thoughts on how they're doing?
Don't look at me for this answer.
Yeah, since you're Canadian.
The U.S. Curling Association, in my opinion, has struggled a bit over the last call it 4 to 8 years in trying to figure out what system works the best to selecting their Olympic teams. They've gone away from just having teams qualify through other means, and they've tried to take some of the best players and match them up and put them together through funding mechanisms and stuff like that. It's not always obvious, I guess, to the general public on how some of these teams get put together. But certainly there's a lack of depth and talent, and certainly in our region here in Ohio and Indiana and Michigan, there's lots of space for upcoming talent, even at the junior level, at an under 21 level.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I definitely think that all the U.S. Olympic curlers that are out there now, they're certainly much better than I am at playing the game. But, you know, I think that there's, like Jonathan said, there's a lot of room for some good junior curlers to come up and do pretty well. So,
and, you know, just something that I was curious about. In the Olympics, they have the men on one team, the women on another team. Do they have co-ed teams at different levels, or is it always men team, women team?
They definitely do, yeah. You can have a mixed team, which is usually two men and two women, and then there are also open teams, which is any combination of men and women, and at the recreational level, and I think some people would even argue at the Olympic level, but certainly at the recreational level, it's a pretty even playing field as far as men and women curling together in the same competition.
And is curling, is it catching on in the U.S., Jonathan?
Incredibly. Incredibly.
Okay. What are the numbers like?
Off the top of my head, I mean, just on a facilities being built right now, we were counting somewhere between 6 and 8 new curling facilities being built around the country right now. Fort Wayne, Indiana just opened in January. We've got contacts in Indianapolis who are trying to build a club. We're trying to build a club. Denver, Pittsburgh, San Francisco, and Phoenix, I believe, are all in the process of either raising money. Charlotte, North Carolina, excuse me, as well, are all in the process of raising money to build new facilities. So certainly the demand is there to justify these grassroots efforts to build facilities.
Mm-hmm. Think so, Stephanie? Is it catching on?
Oh, definitely. You know, we've had so much interest just, you know, in our club, even after the Olympic curlers started throwing stones on Monday, just the interest has been really great.
Good to hear.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to both of you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jonathan Penny and Stephanie Simpson are members of the Cincinnati Curling Club.